Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're just gonna get started here, Davis. And how do you pronounce your last name?
It's pronounced Jadu.
Jadu.
Yep.
Davis Jadu. My brother, how's it going, man? Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, especially my first podcast. So I'm really, really excited, and let's get it going.
Yeah, that's what's up. Have you done any like coaching or teaching or anything like that, public speaking, anything like that before?
Well, public speaking, since I'm in the Army, I publicly speak like 90% of the time when needed. But coaching wise, I only coach when either A, I volunteer to do it, or B, when somebody was like, hey, I'm not going to be there. So can you cover down for me? And I'm saying, absolutely.
Yeah.
So
How do you like coaching?
I really love it. It's kind of like a litmus test, right? So the knowledge I have obtained using the time to teach, to able to use to kind of convey what I know. And actually it helps me out to actually learn like, okay, I know this technique, I know it's in my head, but can I convey it to people to where they can understand how I am trying to convey it to them, you know? So that's it's really helpful. And I believe even if you're a hobbyist, it's very important to actually dive into investing time to actually learn how to teach. Even if it's like you're a white belt talking to people, it builds on your knowledge. So
Yeah, I completely agree. There's a skill in and of itself of being able to explain what's going on and be able to pass that information off. And I think that even someone who's like 6 months in can bring value to someone who is, it's their first day, right? I think there might be a little bit of clicking going on with your microphone if we just want to like double check that. I don't know if something's like tapping into it or it's not that bad, but I just want to make sure.
I think it's because a lot of, I don't know, a lot of people or people, but a lot of devices in my house is using Bluetooth. And so I'm using Bluetooth. But let me see if I can switch off from my headphones to the laptop, see if it removes
Yeah,
it
let's just
quickly.
try it out. And I can like edit this out, so it's not a big
Okay,
deal.
that's cool. Give me a second here.
Can you hear me?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yeah, that actually sounds way better if
Awesome.
you're cool with that.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good to go now.
Okay, yeah, that's way better. Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, so I completely agree with you as far as like teaching goes. I think everybody can establish value from it. Now, you've definitely been in the scene for a lot longer than me, so I think we're gonna go in on some cool stuff. So I kind of want to jump right into it. As far as like what I like to kind of extravagate from like these podcasts is kind of like thinking about finding out a little bit more about like your journey, right? Like, you said that you are a brown belt, correct? Like,
Right.
I'm very interested to hear like what the progression was like at each belt and what was the experience like. So if you can kind of start off with like what initially got you even interested in jiu-jitsu, like how did you even find it out?
So even before I found or invested my time in jiu-jitsu the summer of 2012, growing up, probably my early high school years, I kind of did like the traditional taekwondo and so forth. Did a little bit of wrestling for like 2 months in 10th grade, and then my grade slipped. So I really sucked at wrestling. So I was like, all right, gotta pull out of wrestling. Did a little bit of boxing towards the end of my senior year, and then had a little short hiatus when I was in junior college. And then right after I graduated from my junior college, there was been a jiu-jitsu school about a couple blocks down from my house, and I always wonder, like, man, one of these days I am actually gonna go in and try it out, And there was a transition of where I am trying to go to a different school, which was going to be in Georgia at the end of that summer. And so I was like, you know what? I have nothing else to do. I'm gonna walk down the street and go to this gym,
That's
right? And
what's up.
the gym was located behind a or right next to a Greyhound bus station. I walked in. So like it was a kind of like half MMA sort of, and my first professor Daniel Beleza, straight from the motherland, had a thick Brazilian accent. He's like, "Oh, you want to try jiu-jitsu?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Okay, you want to sit here, observe the class." Looked at it, small guys, big guys going at it, and then when it was time to actually, for them to do some rolling, he's like, "All right, there's odd people." He's like, "Hey, you want to try it out?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." Got on the mat. Didn't know anything except like I guess side control, went with one of the brown belts. He's a black belt right now. He let me have it, right? Got on side control, like freaking white knuckle it. And then I got really tired. And he's like, all right, my turn. Boop, swept me, choked me out. I was hooked. And I think it wasn't much of mostly the experience. It was the concept of like utilizing technique, right? And science to actually overcome your
opponent. Right? Like this is a skill that you have exactly. to develop.
So instead of having like, brute strength versus brute strength, right? Which for me being small, if I go against a bigger guy, right? Like strength does matter, you know? And so I'm like, okay, I'm really invested. I really like this. Like, and also obviously people, UFC, right? It's like, always crazy, this dude in the gi, in pajamas beating everybody up, And at the time I'm like, man, I did Taekwondo, right? And I was like, I don't think this, it's going to work out. But then in actuality, it did.
And then you watch the fight between him and the guy that does Taekwondo, and you're like, oh. Because I did Taekwondo too, so I understand. Exactly.
and don't get me wrong, right? Like, there are, and this applies to everything, right? There are little snippets that you can ascertain from certain areas, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Applicable. But then there's things that are not applicable. But then it's like, like a jiu-jitsu, right? It's contextual, right? And that's the one thing I really, one of my philosophies that go through this journey is everything's contextual.
Yeah.
Right. So, if I can't freaking body lock somebody and throw them, slam them to the ground, right? If there's things that I can do to actually, to adjust, to actually, apply and adjust to the situation at the time to actually, make the technique work.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, it's like you're thinking about the actual what's going on as to why is this person being taken down, right? Like creating off balance, having like making sure that their weight is to one side and not the other, right? Like, is that kind of what you mean?
Right, right. So, one of the points that I want to highlight is like, at each belt, right? As you progress along in your jiu-jitsu journey, everybody's ascertained techniques, right? Everybody ascertains, learns sequences, but everybody thinks, depending on what level they're at, they would just take it as face value, right? It's like, oh, this is how you do an armbar. This is how you do a triangle. As a white belt, that's all you go by, right? That's like whatever the professor or the coach says is gospel, where it's like, oh, this is 100% like written down in stone and it's concrete and I'm going to abide by it. But as you progressed on, it's like, okay, the way that my coach or professor showed me years ago might not work for me now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's one of the things like to keep in mind of don't take techniques at face value, right? So kind of investing in, okay, well, how does this work? Why does this work? And tying into, does this work for me in this way? Or what ways can I adjust it to make it work for me? Yeah. If it doesn't work at all, then okay, let me put it to the side and come back to it and review it later on.
Yeah, I think that's an important realization to have, because sometimes it's not about the technique, but it's about like the why it happens. And then when you understand the why, you can kind of figure out like the way that your body wants to perform the move. It helps you like put things into like, I guess, I know it's a little overused, but we can call it like a system where you understand that there's like anticipated reactions and stuff like that. And I think that helps people learning. So when you were first getting into like jiu-jitsu, did you like sign up right away? What was that like beginning like the first 6 months, first year?
So knowing that my time in my hometown was cutting short before I moved down to Georgia to continue my schooling, I just trained for 2 months and then 2 months there. And within those 2 months, I had tried to attend like every class that was available, per week. And it was very, inspiring, very insightful, very humbling, right? So at first I'm like, since I was a smaller person in the entire group, the only person I can was paired up with was this, at the time, 12-year-old kid, And in my head, I'm like, I'm in the army. I got
like offensive. Muscle,
yeah, I'm like, I can smash this dude all day, right? And then 12. All of a sudden, kid freaking like Kimura me, armbar me, trying like 10,000 ways, right? That was one moment, part of my experience through my journey of like being humbled. Another one was paired up with a female, first time ever.
Yep.
She was a blue belt. My professor was like, hey, this is so-and-so. I know she's a female, but don't take it easy on her. And then me being like chivalrous and respectful, I'm like, threw me, took me down, everything. I was like, destroyed me on the mats.
So like, some girls are, especially some girls are super tough.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like some of them, there's something inherent that they have something to prove, right? Not in a negative way, but like kind of like a little bit of that ability to push them to actually like go beyond 100%, you know what I mean?
Skill. And that kind of became one of my favorite reasons as to why I actually like to train with like women and smaller people, is because usually they have to like learn the technique better or more efficiently than someone who's bigger, because they get away with less. So those are always some of my favorite moments about that, for sure. Like when I was first getting into it, like my first few months, I went with this like 105-pound brown belt girl. And in my mind, I was like, should I be taking it easy on her? Like, I don't know how this works. But I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to see what she's got. And I remember just trying to like get by her guard. And she just triangled me, kimura'd me, omoplata'd me like 8 times in a row in like 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, there's something to this. Like there is something that I do not know about this like thing. So when you were like kind of coming up as a white belt, like, did you actually, because I know that you moved, did you wind up like joining another school right away, or did it take you some time?
So when I went down there, in my head, I was like, man, there's no jiu-jitsu down here. At the time, I was new to the area. And then they gave me a nice handy note, Dora the Explorer, but a freaking handbook. And it said, all right, here's the clubs that are available in the school. And
yeah.
I was like, there's no jiu-jitsu. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, no way, in the school. Lucky.
Yeah. It's a very really small, cool. Yeah, it's a very small club. It started like 2 years prior before me coming down, and it ran by purple belt and a blue belt. And so I was there, and I was like, all right, let me do my thing. Then still muscling it out, hulking it out, no limited techniques. Didn't understand like, hey, you just gotta relax and wusa and all that stuff. And then at that moment, it took me almost a year, or actually 6 months after I showed up, to actually realize like, I am really not getting this down. Like, and I don't know why. So I'm thinking about like, man, I've been hulking out for almost like 18 months basically, right?
No, so you trained consistently for over a year at that school club. Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there, and I remember the purple belt and the blue belt going at it, you know? And they're just chilling and relaxed. I'm looking, I'm like, man, what is the difference between me and them, right? And I'm
that's like, a really good question to ask, right?
I'm like, okay, boom. And then a light bulb hit my head. I'm like, oh, I really need to chill out, just relax. Let me test the waters the next time I roll. The next time I grab somebody low ranking like myself or very experienced like myself, just relax. And then boom, just a light bulb clicked. And I'm like, that's what I need to do. That's why I've been struggling this entire time. You know, and I think if it was somebody who actually like mentored me, pulled me aside and was like, hey, you need to chill out, relax, I would have got it quicker. And that's the one thing I always tell beginners right from the start. It's like, the limited techniques that you have, rely on it. Don't rely on your strength. Yes, that's like something that you're comfortable with, but the faster you rely on your limited techniques that you have at that moment, the more you're gonna excel, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like a return on investment. You know, if you rely on, you know, invest on this small thing, you're gonna get big gains later on.
Yeah. That's really interesting too, because I know for me as well, it took me 2 years before like I was going, actually it was with one of my first rounds with Deagle, Rob Deagle.
Yeah.
And he was like, ah, dude, like I like you, but yeah, you're a little crazy. Like you gotta like calm it down a bit. And that was the first time I ever heard about like relaxing in jiu-jitsu, because I started off in this like MMA school and it was about like go as hard as possible. And Deagle was one of the people who I saw just like heel hooking everybody in the gym.
Yeah.
And I was like, something's to this. Something is to this. Cause I don't see anybody else doing this. So that's when I started to explore that same theory as well. So as a white belt, did you ever do any competitions before you got your blue?
Yes. I did 2-3 tournaments. So I didn't do any tournaments when I was up in Pennsylvania when I started training. When I got out in Georgia, I was like, you know, people were like, hey, you should compete. I'm like, cool, right? I'll do it. Obviously nervous, right? But I believe like competing, the reason why I wanted to compete is a litmus test, right? Just because you're able to apply the techniques and, you know, either smash or get smashed at school, at the school or gym that you're in, that I'm in. But you, when you're, you know, it's an ultimate test of like, hey, have you progressed in certain things? What areas do you need to focus on, right? And it's positive, it's immediate feedback, right? Because you're going against somebody you might have never seen before, never rolled before, and it might show something, that a gap or some strong suit in your game, right? Mm-hmm. So I started competing. I didn't win any tournaments at all. And it's funny because I think my first tournament, I later on, like, the professor I went to to train at a school at the time, when he was there to coach me, my first opponent, his professor, was later on became my professor when I actually moved down to Fort Benning, Georgia, to continue my Army career. And there's a pretty significant story behind that. If we ever cover it later on, but competed a little bit, and then realized that the school that I was at, the professor had at my second professor, he was teaching more of like self-defense oriented, yep, versus like, hey, this is how you do a Barambolo, this is how you do a Toriando.
X-Pass. This is how you compete. This is how you like succeed against other people that do jiu-jitsu, right?
Exactly. So that's, you know, first time I was out there, I was like, you know, all right, hold, establish grips, and then pull guard. All right, now he's X-passing me. I'm like, I have never felt this before. What is this X-pass? You know, like, you know, getting stuff, being leg dragged. What's a leg drag? I don't know. You know, I'm getting in these positions, you know. He bowed body triangle me. I never knew what a body triangle was, right? And like, some of these concepts, like these huge gaps that was in my game, I'm like, all right, I need to figure out how to do this, right?
And you winded up switching schools because of, it's interesting, you know, you could go into whatever detail that you wish, but it's interesting because, right, I've just been having this conversation a lot recently, and it's definitely something that I've been through. And I think that there is definitely a lot of people out there that, like, you know, that kind of run into similar situations where like they look to start competing, or they want to like take it to another level, and they feel that they need to change their environment in order to succeed at that. And I think that, right, can be very difficult for some people. So, right, what was that experience like, if you're comfortable sharing?
Yeah. So I was there at the school for 2 years. And that was just the time span of me like being there and continuing my education and finishing school, right?
Yeah.
And then the moment I, you know, moved further south to Fort Benning, my next professor, he was more sport oriented, right? Sport jiu-jitsu oriented. Mm. And you know, I always tell him and a couple of my friends who, you know, want to know my jiu-jitsu journey, I was like, all right, the professor I had when I was at my college, he was like, I was like Rocky, and he was my, you know, my Mickey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you gotta catch chick, you gotta run and catch chickens, you know, like fundamentals, you know? And my, you know, my professor afterwards, he was like my Apollo Creed. He actually showed me like how to float, how to move, you know, like sport, like the things that I wanted to focus on. And he like tremendously like, you know, helped me improve my game, you know? Shout out to Professor Josh Boland.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like that a lot because like, firstly, I'm a big fan. I was big into like fitness and like personal training, right? And you seem like a smart guy. I feel like you would know about like, you understand how like there's like to lose weight or whatever, there's like an energy balance of like calories in, calories out. Is that something that you've ever heard of, right?
Yeah, yes.
I was really big into that because I winded up that kind of was like the truth of weight loss, but you would see other people that were like, oh, you need to like take this supplement, or you need to like follow this like strict diet in order to see results. But the actual, like the science was, there's a law of thermodynamics. You need to consume less energy for your body to burn off that energy. Right. And ever since then, like, I've always been a huge fan of seeing the truth be revealed. Right. And I always thought that, you know, especially you being a leg locker, you could probably have a test to this. Like, what exactly is like the fundamentals that people talk about, right? Like, I don't know. It's always been like a very weird thing to me. Interestingly, like, I remember this one situation, I was training and I caught this guy in an ankle lock, and he was like, he was a little bit newer and he was really interested in it, right? He was like, dude, what was that? He was really interested. And if someone's really interested in something, I'm going to show them because I think it's like fun, right? Especially if they're like, what was that? Like it made them excited, right? So I start showing, And he's listening and we're getting it, we're working through it. And this like couple of the purple belts, they're like, oh, you stop doing that. Like, he doesn't need to do that. He needs to learn about like fundamentals of like posture and stuff. And I'm just like, you mean things that take like 10 years to develop, like, like posture and stuff like that. So, and then I ended up just showing him like a head and arm triangle or something like that. But
That's fundamental, right?
What's the difference?
So I think it's more like this. I mean, the fundamentals, I think people kind of, you know, talk about in similarity to concepts, right? Like any move, okay, there are moves that are like freaking crazy. You need to have some sort sense of athleticism to execute, mm-hmm. right? A flying arm bar.
Cartwheel pass.
Yes, all those stuff, right? But I think what they're talking about is like focusing on concepts, right? Any technique that you can show, even to the lowest level, it can be fundamental, right? You can show somebody who, you know, a white belt, you know, who, you know, because that's spazzy, right? Or you can trust, like, he has some sort of discipline to not, you know, go for a crank this heel hook, rip, you know, yeah. the heel hook and whatnot. You can show them, him or her, like, hey, this is the fundamentals of how you get into a leg lock, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like you. It basically depends on how the instructor conveys the information, right?
So you would agree then that, like, if you've ever been to a new school, isn't it crazy how the attitude of everybody in the room is like a direct reflection of the instructor?
Oh, absolutely. 100% agree. Right. Because especially if somebody who's like brand new, they have no idea, right? This is like their first their perception and impression of like, this is the culture. This is the clique, so to speak, right? This is how everybody operates within this organization. So, hey, I don't want to be this odd person because I'm new. Well, I'm going to join them. I want to be like, you know, synchronized in the way they think, the way they talk, the way they kind of, you know, their ideas and so forth, right? So it's kind of like inherent that it kind of happens. Now you have one of those two people who are like a maverick or someone who's like, oh, I'm just here for techniques. I know I have my own, I'm free thinking. I don't think like everybody else, right? So we have those, you know, people out there, but a lot of people that walk right in day one, they will adopt that, you know, if they stay long, adopt that mindset of the school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So what was it like transitioning into like blue belt? Did you wind up getting a blue belt at that school? And then if you want, I know you made some notes about like what you share to each belt, if you want to throw out those points about white belt, and then we can move on to blue.
Absolutely. So before I moved down to Fort Benning, so that school that I was at, that was near my college, you know, I got my blue belt finally. But it took a really long time, only because I didn't, you know, I was bouncing between two schools, the first school I was at and my other school. So I'm like, okay, so which organization do I get promoted under, right? And so when I went to visit my first school, my first professor, I went from no stripe white belt to three stripes, right? Because I was gone for so long. And he, you know, when he rolled with me, he kind of assessed like, okay, you improved, you know, you're not getting submitted a lot, you know, you're just getting submitted a lot less and you're learning some concept. All right, boom, you know, three stripes, right? Went back down, you know, to Georgia, and then finally I got my blue belt. And when he remembered, you know, got my blue belt. And then I felt like, boom, a whole bunch of doors opened. But I felt like when I went down to my next school, there was a huge gap in my training, my progression, right? Again, going from a self-defense-oriented school to a sports-oriented school and seeing like, man, as a white belt, I should be knowing this. I should be knowing this, you know? And then like, I didn't learn some of these talking points about what each like white belt should know up until I was like purple belt, right? And I got my purple belt at a different school when I moved to Colorado Springs, Colorado. You know, before I go to that point, so as a white belt, right? As a white belt, again, like I stated earlier, like, you know, you're able to progress faster, in my opinion, if you utilize the limited techniques that you have, right? And just like focusing on being relaxed, using technique and not relying on strength, right? Even if you get, you know, getting destroyed, even if you are in the worst position, you should like just reset and just keep pushing that until you actually feel like, hey, like I'm can able to rely on technique versus strength, right? And another thing is, you know, you want to be relaxed, be comfortable in an uncomfortable like position, right? And I know that's like old, like, you know, adage from any school you go to, they talk about that, right? You want to be comfortable to where you're like, you're inverted, you're getting smashed by some like 200 plus pound person.
You just want to be in like you want to be able to like be in the bottom of the mount and not panic.
Exactly.
That's an important, like, I feel like there can be more, just to add to what you said, like, I think there can be more value in somebody being relaxed and kind of like taking it in, getting tapped out like 6 times in a round, than trying to like squeeze out of everything. And then they're just tired at the end of the round, but they didn't get submitted. So they count it as like a win. Right.
Exactly. And it's also a psychological effect on your opponent. Right. And I do this all the time. So a lot of people that roll with me can attest to that. I have this like poker face, right? I don't show any facial expressions whatsoever. You know, I'm calm, even in the worst position, you know, somebody taking my back, I'm in a very deep heel, like a leg lock position, just getting relaxed, right? To the point to where when they don't see any facial expression from me, they freak out, right? They're like, well, one in my head is like, why is this person not, like, why is he not having any, like, emotional feedback?
Yeah, he's not worried.
Yeah, he's like, not worried. Now that person's worried, to where it's like, okay, is my submission even close? Like, am I doing the right thing? Okay, now what? Now I'm just doing this psychological, like, warfare within themselves, right? Like, you know, what's going on, right? They have to, they're kind of messing up their battle rhythm and, like, figuring out their plan, right? From the get, instead of having their, like, plan A, you know, game plan when rolling with me, right? And then like another, you know, going back to what another white belt should know, like should understand and trying to accomplish, you know, as they progress, is become escape artists, right? So tying in with being a white belt, not knowing a lot of techniques, right? You should know how to, you know, defend submissions and escape from submissions, right? So you're gonna be like an escape artist,
right? Mm-hmm.
Like Houdini, right? Because if you know how to escape, how to defend, then you, in you know, conversely, you know, you're going to know how to attack, right?
Yeah, because you know what they're trying to do, and it helps you be more confident in your offense.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So, like, with that mindset, you're able to understand, like, you know, when you're drilling out a technique, you're going to know, like, okay, if I get this person in this position at this angle, right, I know his defense, because I do it, is this. So that means I have to counter it by using this, right? So it's kind of using that counteraction type, like, sequence,
yeah,
concept, a framework to understand, like, how to, you know, overcome your opponent, right? And vice versa, if you're on the defensive end, then you know how to, like, deal with it, because now you know how to defend it. And then you're going to know he or she needs to do this. So I'm going to do it like this, right? So it's an endless battle, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of what jiu-jitsu is, right? It's like starting here. This is my offense. This is the reaction. And then the answer to that reaction is this. And the answer to that reaction is this. And it's something that keeps chaining down. And the more you are down that chain, then the better off you're going to be.
Exactly. So it's a battle of, like, of offensive cycle versus defensive cycle, right?
Yeah.
So I, you know, talking like Gary Tony, he talks about this in his instruction, right? It's like, yeah. You want to be, if you're on the defensive cycle, you want to break that. You want to switch it up to your offensive cycle, right? And vice versa. And it's a constant battle. And that's what basically, like, jiu-jitsu is all about. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good way of putting it. Big DDS thing for sure. And obviously those guys are killers. They always talk about that concept. No, I was just going to start, you know, just, if you don't have anything else to say about white belt, I was curious about, like, your competition experience as a blue belt, if you've done anything like that, and how that transitioned into purple.
So blue belt, it was a time of, like, just losing a lot, like losing a lot. And I don't know if it factors in contributing to me going to a different school, moving across the country from the east side or east coast to, you know, the Midwest for the Army and going to a different school. There's, you know, my next school was, like, still sport oriented, but the techniques wasn't, like, was different, and obviously the atmosphere was different, and it wasn't the same, you know what I mean? Two different professors, like, thoughts and philosophies and how they believe in certain techniques and sequences. So it changed a lot for me.
They didn't like leg locks, did they?
No. So
that's all you got to say, right? As soon as we start, I don't know about their technique. Okay. They don't like leg locks.
Cool. Yeah. So I didn't even get into leg locks until like I came back to the East Coast, back to my school. So
you came back to Georgia.
Yes. So when I left, it wasn't like, my professor didn't invest his, time in leg locks, right? And then when I came back, he's like, all right, guys, we're going to learn leg locks, right? We're going to learn, like, how to execute a heel hook. And I'm laying my head, I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're actually going to do something? Like, are we really going to hurt me? And, I was really scared of doing leg locks. But then I finally found, like, the niche, right? So, like, in my head, I was thinking leg locks equals, like, somebody like Bojarez ripping my leg off.
Yeah.
And now I can't walk for a year, right? But then that was during the time when, the Danaher Death Squad was on the scene, growing popularity. And it's like, no, it's the leg lock position is not about, grabbing and ripping. It's more of control, right? You want to get the control and you can slowly apply the submission through the, the mode of control. And that's how you effectively do leg locks versus grabbing and ripping,
Yeah.
So going back to my blue belt experience, I learned some tidbits and stuff, didn't win anything. But then when I moved back to Georgia, back to my previous school, that's when I actually dived into, leg locks. And I got promoted as a purple belt before I moved back to Georgia. So
you got promoted in Colorado?
Yes.
Okay. So you're probably killing them, right, over there. They gave you the purple belt. And what was the experience like coming back to your school as a purple belt? Was it something that was accepted? Was it a little weird at first?
No, it wasn't. So if a different professor, promotes you, it's like, and you come back to, your previous professor or someone new, it's like, okay, I'm going to trust that the person that promoted you to this belt actually, understand and trust you, hey, you have what it takes, from learning from the stuff that you learn as blue belt and transitioning to purple belt, right? So going back, I kind of, my progression was kind of looked like it didn't go anywhere, but it looked like I went two steps back instead of a couple steps forward. So then I had to kind of revamp and bring myself back to where I was before I moved to Colorado, right? Kind of like another Rocky reference, but kind of like when Apollo Creed got killed, and he's like, I don't want to train against the Russian, and got to go back to try to reset himself so that way he can prepare to so forth. So that's how I was. It's like kind of reset, and then from there I kind of improved and got a lot better compared to who I was and where I was when I was there the first time around.
Yeah, that's interesting. It seems like it was a lot more of the self. You probably really wanted to catch up as a new purple belt, but it didn't seem like they brought any drama upon you because of you getting a belt somewhere else. Because that can be a big deal to some people.
Not at all. It was more like, man, what happened to you? You're like digressing versus progressing.
Yeah. So
I was like, oh crap, I need to.
I guess that's what happens when you go to we'll say a shit school. If you go to a school that's not as good, yeah, absolutely. I think that can happen. Actually, that happened somewhat to me. When I originally moved from New York and I went to South Carolina, I was a 4-stripe white belt and I left Sarah's. And I started going to this academy near my house. And they were very right off the bat, I grabbed someone's heel and they were purple belt and they had no clue how to hide their heel or anything. And the instructor was like, ooh, white belts shouldn't know that and stuff like that. And I was like, oh God, this is going to be great. And it was definitely an interesting training environment for sure. And I winded up going back to New York just to visit family. And I visited Sarah's and I definitely was oh, I really miss this intense type of training that you get from whatever type of school that you like. It seemed like the school that you went to in Georgia, the instructor seemed like he actually really gave a shit about jiu-jitsu and progressing it. And there's something special about that. And they winded up actually, Matt Sarah gave me my blue belt, and that was 3 months at this new academy. And I winded up telling him hey, my old instructor gave me my blue belt. And he was insanely upset about it. And I winded up never going back there after that. Cause if Matt Sarah gives you a belt, you're the new belt. Yeah. And I'm not giving it back.
Yeah, exactly.
I ended up switching schools after that, and I found a great gym that's like everyone's cool there. Everything's cool with the gym. So it's always nice to be like out of that jiu-jitsu drama and just be able to be somewhere, be in an environment where you can just focus in on technique and the progression of that. So, you know, as a purple belt, what were some of the skills that you were trying to develop, and did you do any competitions at that level?
So as a purple belt, I did a lot of competitions. Still didn't win, like, I mean, I placed, but didn't win like gold at all. I'm just up until like one of the HEFs that I did, and it was surprisingly in no gi, instead of gi, right?
What do you prefer?
So for me, it depends, right? It's contextual, okay? So if it was like heel hooks, oh, it's no gi, you know? But then if it's more like controlling and more, I guess, technical sense and involving more complexity, I would prefer gi. But again, it's contextual, right? So,
but you competed at both.
Yes, I competed at both. You know, I still try and go for the gold in gi, but I've yet to accomplish that. But I have more success. Obviously, you can tell from the videos I sent you in no gi.
Right? Yeah, ride the wave, dog. Let the devil on your shoulder grow.
Oh yeah, so
let it speak to you.
Yeah, so as purple belt, you know, I was really focused on leg locks, you know, and obviously with the Down and Her guys, I was like, man, these are some beasts with them legs, you know, like attacking legs. And I finally found what I was good at, you know, like very, very good at, you know, and I invested my time in like learning the systems, right? You know, at first it was the Ashigarami system from Down and Her. And then later on when Lachlan Giles with his 50-50 K-guard type, you know, outside senkaku leg lock system. Like that's, I got really into it.
It seemed like that's what made it click for you. Like,
absolutely. It's weird too, because I would never thought like me coming in, hearing like, hey, we're going to learn leg locks today. Especially like we're going to learn how to do a heel hook. Me being afraid of like trying it out. And it's like, sure enough, that was my niche. That was my thing, you know?
Sometimes that's what it takes, right? Like your most fearful thing, and then you do it, and then you realize like, oh, this isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like as long as you guys aren't cranking stuff on each other, like, and you also, I feel that the more educated you are upon of it, the safer that it is, because you know the limitations of like where the break is, what is possible.
Absolutely. And one great example is like learning Kani Basami, right? The scissor leg takedown. You know, when someone giving me a single leg. So like a lot of people are like, oh, this is very dangerous. It is. But again, like any technique, right? Whether it's an arm bar or a heel hook, it goes with proper education, right? Proper teaching and proper understanding of like, hey, this is the dangers of it. But this is how you mitigate those dangers, mitigate those risks, right? So that way, one, you can successfully execute the technique. And two, you don't hurt your opponent to where it's like not past the point of where the person, you know, can't walk
anymore. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen some crazy scissor takedown videos that are out there. It's interesting.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it as of late.
There was one that surfaced recently that was really bad, but I think it's interesting how, like, sometimes you'll see people do it and it looks completely fine. Like, it doesn't look like there's any problem. Usually they put their hand on the floor and there's like a gracefulness to it. Like, you could tell that they drilled it and you could tell that they're not trying to hurt somebody. They're just trying to get the position. And then you see some people that jump halfway across the mat and they're just like, fuck it. Let's see if this works.
Yeah. And they're like, they're not even close to their opponent. They're like not even putting a hand on the ground. They're not even high above the knee, you know? And it's like, boom, you know?
Yeah. Whenever I see those videos of someone's like knee collapsing from a scissor leg takedown, it always like makes me happy that I pull guard. I'm always just like, okay, I don't have to worry about that.
yeah.
So when you did those competitions that you sent me, because I definitely want to look at those. Was that brown belt level or purple belt level?
So that was when I moved from Georgia to where I am now in Fort Hood, Texas. So that's in the Killeen area. So that's when things really picked up. The school that I'm at now, Legends BJJ, they're very, you know, competition oriented, more no gi than gi, but
awesome.
Either way, like either style, they kill it, you know.
Nice.
And my professor right now, Professor Travis Moore, he's a well-renowned like leg locker. Oh, so
absolutely.
He actually, so yeah.
Outstanding. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. He took my game to a whole nother level. You know what I mean? And that's when they were like, oh yeah, you know, Submission Hunter Pro is out, you know, you should have 5 fights winners. It's you know, in Austin, you should have 5. And I'm like, man, I always, you know, as a blue belt, seeing the early, you know, shows and fights to win, I'm like, I should try out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, man, it would be cool to be on there.
Yeah, exactly. Be on the big stage in front of people, lights on you, and like just show your skill, right? I'm like, okay, I'm gonna apply. And me thinking like, I'm 135 pounds. There's nobody out there, but you know what? I'm gonna apply for this, and you know, let's see what happens. And sure enough, you know, I got an email saying, hey, your application got accepted. You know, we're gonna find you an opponent. And I'm like, okay. My application got accepted, but now I'm going to wait on an opponent. Not likely to happen. And then like a week later, hey, we found your opponent, you know? And I'm like, oh crap, this is actually happening.
This is actually going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from then it was training was intense. I'm like, you know, game plan was leg locks, right? Because I was like, you know, leg lock fetish, you know? I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
Highlight reel.
Yeah, highlight reel and boom. Like, yeah.
And it worked, right?
Yeah, it worked. Crazy, huh? Obviously, like, game, you know, my plan to get a certain position didn't work out, but during the transition, during the engagement with my opponent that night, you know, adjusted and boom, I got a leg lock, so I was pretty happy about it.
Yeah, those two matches were definitely good, and it even looked like the opponents were actually defending your leg locks intelligently, and you happened to just get a breakthrough, which is always cool, right? Like, it's always more satisfying to get the leg lock when the person actually knows how to defend and you're anticipating reactions. Rather than like you've been through it, like you grab someone's leg, they have no idea how to hide their heel and you just catch it and it's like, oh, cool. Okay, like, yeah. What's that thing? So yeah. So that was at brown belt, correct? That was at brown belt level?
Yeah, so my first super fight was in November 20 of 2020. That was my first super fight as brown belt.
Okay.
And then the second super fight that you footage that you have was in February. And that was for Submission FC.
Awesome. So I definitely want to review that, and I want to just see how being a brown belt has been so far. But if you want, you can tell a little bit about like what you would recommend for the blue belts and the purple belts and like where their focus is on those.
Okay. So the points about for blue belts is like, you know, you progress from white belt to blue belt, right? So you have some an understanding of fundamentals, right? But you don't have like the fully invested, like knowing, you know, in and out of fundamentals, right? You kind of have a glimpse of, hey, these are fundamentals, these are concepts that you should know, right? Like an example is like, hey, making sure you have like T-Rex arms, like elbows in,
yeah,
elbow knee connection, you know, like protect your neck, you know, those concepts. But you don't have that like deeper understanding of like, okay, like what is there within that those concepts, right? So now you know as a blue belt, you should find out not only conceptually but technique wise like what are some techniques that's going to work for you and what techniques I don't put away like for good, but to put on the back burner. Right.
Yeah.
And you're going to revisit that. Cause a couple of times when I was a blue belt, you know, I thought my Kimura game was trash. Right. I was like, man, I get these Kimuras, like nothing's working. Right. So I put it on the back burner. And then later on, close to myself being a purple belt, I was like, okay, I'm going to revisit Kimuras. And then that's when the Kimura trap system came out. And I'm like, okay, now I can actually understand like, better understanding of the Kimura, right? So there's some things like don't, you know, focus on techniques that are good at that moment, then don't cast away techniques that are like for good, you know, always put it on the back burner, put it on, you know, put it aside and like, hey, I'm going to revisit that because later on you might pick it up.
I feel like that's really when you put time into your game.
Exactly. And then the next point is most important was like, question is how to beat the blue belt blues, right? Because everybody sees like the moment a white belt gets a blue belt, boom, and all of a sudden they just disappear and never come back, right?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it could be a number of reasons, you know, like financial issues, personal, like, you know, family issues, personal issues, or most likely like sometimes they got promoted and all of a sudden they still feel like they're getting, you know, they're not improving because they're getting
sometimes shit. It's about like they'll say, oh, financial relationships, whatever, but sometimes it's about like the priority of it has like, decreased, right?
Right.
We all struggle to be busy, right? Like even as a white belt, right? But sometimes when you're a white belt, it can be really exciting. And then sometimes when you get to the blue, it's like, oh, well, I achieved this thing that I've always wanted. So now the drive just starts to like dissipate and you're more to like succumb to excuses.
Right. And like a way, like a solution that I found is like kind of develop starting from, you know, white belt is having that mental / intestinal fortitude, right? Of like, hey, this is gonna suck no matter what belt you're gonna be at, and just keep go driving forward, right?
Yeah.
So the obstacle that's in front of you is not a stopping point, but it's more a transitional point of like, okay, this is a time to where, okay, I'm at either a plateau or something's not working. I'm gonna take this time to not quit, but to kind of like take a knee, kind of like relax, think about it, like, okay, let's identify some friction points. Identify what is going on with my performance. What are some things that I need to work on, right? And then from there, right, this is a provide an opportunity to actually focus and work on those things. Mm. Instead of going, you know, 10 different ways, you're gonna focus on maybe one or two things. And by the time you know it, you focus on those things, time has passed and you already excelled to where you were before when you hit that so-called like wall, right? That
obstacle. Yeah. I think that was actually one of my favorite things I saw on your notes was like that idea of like every time there's a plateau, it's like an opportunity to level up, in my opinion.
Yes. And it's easier said than done, right? But as long as you just like keep going at it, right? And then not only like keep it to yourself, but actually ask questions, share with your peers, share with someone who is higher ranking to actually like understand, they have more knowledge of maybe whatever you're working on. And that will allow you to not like kind of, you know, having your wheel spinning in the mud, so to speak, and actually getting like some traction from somebody else, like some different ideas of like, oh, I never thought of that. Let me change my grip, you know, in this Kimura, for example. Let me do a thumbless grip versus a thumb grip, you know, maybe like kind of tighten up the grip a little bit. It's stuff like that where it helps you not only like progress, but excel as well, instead of like trying to bang your head through a wall and like see if something, you know, will break through.
You know, yeah. Maybe. You really start paying attention to those like smaller details.
Right.
You start getting that. Because you actually understand a little bit of what's going on. You're more comfortable. So like you can actually pay attention to the differences between like something as small as like elbow positioning and stuff.
Exactly. And I think that's that's one major thing that I've seen as a major gap in you know, different, all the schools I've been at is like the lack of, not the lack of details, but the few important details that are not being mentioned when given the blocking instruction, right? Because I feel like the details is what brings, you know, the devil's in the details. It brings the big picture together. And so, yes, like a white belt might not know much, but if you give him or her one or two key details, it will greatly enhance their understanding and greatly enhance their effectiveness of their, you know, of their technique, whatever they're learning. So that's one thing that I feel like we're kind of missing, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think a lot of people can benefit from hearing that sooner rather than later. And then for purple belt, what are some of the things that you recommend?
So purple belt, now you're at the level where, well, you know, nothing, no braiding techniques, you know, that's given to you, you know, as a white belt, blue belt. I mean, the only thing you do is a wrist lock, right? But as a purple belt, now it's kind of, it feels like that level of that rank of, kind of plateauing, right? But it's, again, it's like an obstacle in your way. It's a time to actually find your style, right? Finding like what kind of, you know, what kind of player are you? Are you takedown? Are you a guard puller? Are you, you know, are you a lapel guard player? Are you, you know, worm guard player? You know, are you a heel? Are you a leg locker? You know, this is the time where you actually invest, you know, dial it in on the mats, kind of labbing it out of like what is my style, you know? Am I a speed passer? Am I a pressure passer? And also like focusing on things that you want to focus on and see if it applies to your style, right? Tying into trying to find your way of moving on the mats, you know? And then again, going back to as a blue belt, find those techniques that doesn't work, right? Those things that are on the back burner. Now trying to grab those techniques, bring it back in front of you and like, okay, I put this on the side. Let me see if I can actually implement this now. Because you have more understanding transitioning from a blue belt to a purple belt.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the time to actually like revisit those things, those techniques / concepts.
And it seems to me like at that level is when you really clearly see like your strengths and weaknesses very clearly.
Yes. Yes. Obviously that you gotta know from, you still have long ways to go from purple belt to brown belt to black belt and beyond, right? But now you understand like, hey, I've been in this game for a hot minute. you know, I kind of understand myself, right? Knowing what's my strengths, what my weakness, what I need to work on, you know?
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things that I've heard about purple belt was that a purple belt can be a black belt in some areas, meaning like they'll give a black belt one of their money if it's their game, right? Like if you're a really good lapel guard player and you get someone in lapel guard, you might actually beat them. But then there might be some, obviously you don't have the full game, but there's like almost a sense of mastery, I think, in some. What do you think?
I agree. I think a caveat to this is like, you know, those kids that are, they train when they're like three, you know,
yeah.
Because at the time as a blue belt and a purple belt, they're like almost equipped, the years is equivalent to a black belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I agree. Like, you know, as a purple belt, they have some sort of mastery, right? To give the black belts, higher ranking belts, like a run for their money, you know. But again, being brown belt and black belt, they have those higher knowledge and understanding that purple belt might not have, apart from, again, those kids that, you know, the people that train since they were little, right?
Yeah.
They ever have that ability to kind of piece it together and, you know, still, you know, quote unquote, smash the purple belts, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to your point, I do agree that there are some, purple belt is at the level to where if they mastery at something, give their higher rank run for their money.
Yeah, like they might be good at one thing, right? Like
right.
They're really good at this like one thing that I can see. How was it for you when you got your brown belt? What did that feel like?
When I got my brown belt, it was a surprise. So the school I was at, in Georgia, I kind of thought like, man, I was a three-stripe purple belt, and I'm like, okay, I'm about to leave soon, move to Texas. You know, I'm okay with the stripe. Actually, I don't really care. Like for me, like receiving my belt, my brown belt, I didn't really care much of it because I feel like it's the skills that's more important than the belt, right?
Yeah.
Sure, the belt reflects like, hey, you've been in, you know, you shouldn't, the perception of like, hey, you know a lot. You know, you've been in the game for a while and you have some sort of mastery, right, at that point. But for me, I think it's the skills that were important. But when I got my brown belt, I was surprised, you know. I thought other people that were have same years of experience as me should deserve it more. But I was just surprised. And again, it's me trusting my professor and knowing like, hey, like, you know, Davis at this point should deserve his brown belt because he's at that level. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Then that was you. That was right before you moved back. You moved to Texas.
Yes, that was before I moved to Texas, like a month before.
They love giving you the belt right before you move, huh?
Yeah. So I got my purple belt before I moved back to Georgia, and then I got my brown belt before I moved to Texas. So
yeah, how was it moving to Texas with it?
So moving to Texas, like, well, one, when I got here, that was like I haven't got accumulated to the heat, and I'm like, I am going to train jiu-jitsu.
So different.
Yeah, I moved in the middle of like July, so.
Oh, perfect.
Like, yeah, it's like 110 some degrees, and I'm like, I'm not used to this, right? Go train, and the first person I rolled with, I didn't know he was a black belt, because we were doing no-gi, and then we transitioned to gi, and he put a black belt on. I was like, oh crap, well, here we go. But the experience was like, you know, very hot, you know, but a good atmosphere to train in. You know, I like the environment that is like very austere, very like challenging, to where like it should be uncomfortable. So that way, when you train in an uncomfortable environment, an uncomfortable position, when you go out into a tournament or a different location where it's like the, you know, environment is very suitable for somebody to just be in, man, you're going to crush it because you're.
Yeah, because you're already comfortable.
Yeah, you thrive in like uncomfortable, you know, situations. So.
Yeah. And I know there's a few good schools out in Texas. So where are you at?
Legends BJJ is in Temple, Texas.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome. So how soon after brown belt did you start competing again?
So after brown belt, just right after. So as of right now, I haven't started any major like IBJJF or any of those like local tournaments. But I just did like just two super fights. And the reason being is just really, involved with, you know, with my Army career, and I'm putting that what puts food on the table. So I haven't been invested in actually those tournaments. However, when I have time in the foreseeable future, that's what I'm trying to get back into actual tournaments.
Yeah. It's a little bit, sometimes can be, I don't know, a little bit harder for the upper belt to get matches in regular tournaments, because sometimes, like, I've been to tournaments where there'll be like 15 people in the white belt, 6 in the blue, 3 in the purple, and then nobody is in the brown and black. I see that like all the time. The super fights are cool because they get like promoted and there's like an event. Actually, I think as long as I can get a match, I have my first one at the end of next month. So right. I'm fucking pumped for that. Because that's going to be, I've done a lot of tournaments, but it's like, tell me about what it's like to go out there for just one match and the difference between that and the tournament.
So the tournament, it's obviously you're not in a tournament, you're fighting like multiple people, right? So you're just like, all right, you finish one match, now you have a breather, now you got to go engage, and you got to go fight another person. But the super fight is like, you have one person that you're going to go against, right? Now, the different levels of stress, different factors are, you know, they're there, the difference of it. Like at a tournament, if they obviously, if they provide money, right, for the winner, then that's a different stress factor. But here at a super fight, you have one person, you know, and then at the end of the night, like if you lose, you don't get any money. If you win, you get money, a medal and money, you know what I mean? My experience was really eye-opening of like, hey, this is what could go down, this is what might happen, might not happen. The professionalism of the people that actually run the organization, that run the show. Just different things that you might not see at a tournament, you know? And then also, instead of having multiple mats and people like watching, you know, different mats, it's you on a big stage. Everybody's all eyes on you.
And there's a camera and everything on that one, because they're probably going to be like streaming it or something like that.
Oh yeah, and then also like, if they have the, if that organization or that event provides like walkout music, I think that was like one of my favorite parts. It was like just walking on a catwalk, you know, smoke, your music playing, and just like, man, this is a cool experience.
It seems fun. To do this.
Oh, it's fun. Like, no, the only thing I was focused on was like, all right, let me get in there, get my win, and then just dip out. But like going through it of like them, you know, announcing your name, and then you're like, hey, it's your cue, go walk, right? Walk.
Yeah, well, it's like when you look back on it, right? Like sometimes when you're first doing it, it's like in your head, you're like, I gotta get this match going.
Yeah, I just gotta get this.
But afterwards, you're like, hey, that was actually pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then like not only that, like seeing, you know, your friends, your peers out there, like, oh my gosh, like David's on stage, you know.
Oh, when everyone's competing or when everyone's there, it is actually, it's a good time. It's like more fun than going out to a bar.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. If it's cool with you, I'd like to kind of look at the matches.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Cool. I don't know exactly how you want to do this. If you want, you can like talk a little bit about it. I'm going to share my screen here in a moment. You can talk about it as it goes. If you want, I can like pause it and rewind and see, like, you know, we don't have to go over every little detail like technically, but I definitely am interested in as far as like what's going on in your mind. What are you thinking when certain things happen? Like, what are you going for if it went right, if it went wrong? And Yeah, I'm very curious with just like what the process was like as you were doing it. I think it could be interesting content.
Oh yeah.
I want to know too. I want to see. So, yeah, we'll get it started. You have a particular one you want to start off with first? Or
yeah, we can start with this one. First fight as a brown belt.
This is the first one?
This is the first one.
Okay. I'm probably going to like skip all the intro and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, the 10th planet guy. Looking badass in the gear, man. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Leg locker.
Okay. What's going on in your mind right here?
Okay, so right off the bat, I'm like, okay. So I heard that my opponent was pretty good at takedowns, right? Good at takedowns, and he's from 10th Planet. So in my head, 10P equals bowling guard, rubber guard, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I'm like, okay, let me sit down first. Let me pull guard first.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Beat him to his punch, which allows me to set me up for leg entanglements. That was the first thing. Sit down, establish inside control, and go into my Ashigurami game.
Yeah, especially if you got the get up. If you got the get up on, you got to go out there and do the get up, you know? Yeah, the leg lock.
So right here, I was like, I wasn't sure if he's going to be that type of person. Is like, I'm not going to bump this. I'm just going to bum rush you. So right here, as you paused it, like, I was like semi-crouched.
You're like prepared.
Yes, I was.
I do the same thing, bro. Because you've seen the videos of people. They like go to slap bump and then they like double leg.
Yeah,
that's fucked up.
I was like, I don't know what this, how this guy's gonna operate, but I'm just gonna be prepared.
That's
and he extended to me. I was like, okay, now, okay, you know.
All right, let's continue it on. All right, boom, right there, and the ref immediately turns around. Perfect.
Yep, Nan, right here. Try to get inside control. Double Kikuchi. And then I
that was attacking. that was good. That's actually one of my like favorite sequences there. That was cool.
But the only thing is, looking hindsight is, what I wish was instead of getting connection with my legs and laying back, right, that would have allowed him to actually could potentially hop over and into mount.
Yeah.
So what I could have done better in hindsight is establishing inside control with my sticky hooks and then at least grabbing an ankle and then going more and then establish a better control there. Mm-hmm. But again, hindsight, but you know, it kind of caught him by surprise. So
yeah, using the double Koichi behind the knees as well.
Yes.
And you're able to pull him right in where you want.
Yeah, and then from here, try to
salvage. Were you hyped right here? Were you like, oh fuck yeah? Like
no, I was just focused on like, hey, let me get into, you know, Irimi Hashigurami. Break him down to a hip and then going for the finish. So from here, yeah, right here, he was defending because he's grabbing my right arm and I'm really trying to pull, you know, get control. And he spun out.
Nice. And I thought you switched that football grip for a sec there too.
Yeah, and at this point I was like, all right, let me be like Gordon Ryan here, just chill and relax and like, and got nothing on me, you know. Right here, I tried to do the Kani Basami like Rob Deagle. But unsuccessful right now here.
That's definitely a common reaction for sure when they grab the headlock and they try to highlight.
Yeah, grabbing the headlock, like I knew that would happen, so I was just trying to make sure, you know, make sure he doesn't darce me or any type of headlock from there.
The cross lat grip that you were using.
And at this moment, right here, I tried to come over for the honey hole. Or inside Senkaku, but I didn't. But then this allowed me to get into outside Ashi. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that right there. I want to look at that one.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, okay, I didn't go high enough. So I'm just going to spin. I saw an opening and I spun right into outside Ashi.
Were you actively extending your leg here as he popped his arm through? Did I see that correctly?
So at this moment, yeah, I was just trying to focus on elevating him to where I can actually get into a better position for the laying attainment, right? So at this moment here, I was trying to bring my right leg up so I can come up into, across Ashi. But at that moment, I felt like I didn't have good upper body control on that top part. And then I saw his legs being exposed and not having a weightless leg right there. So I literally just grabbed and spun around and attacked it.
Yeah.
I never drilled like that before. It was just like a spur of the moment, like, oh, this is open, I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah, he tried to block the Kani Basami, and then it looked like you were able to just kind of shoot to the outside really quick, and you got that bite on fast.
Right.
He was trying to block the hip pressure, but.
Yeah, I looking in hindsight again, like, if he knew how to counter that, I would have been screwed because he would have just like dropped down to like 80-20 or reset to at least a minimum 50-50, and it would attack inside heel hook on me.
Sure.
But, you know.
You got it.
Yeah,
I got it. You looked hype afterwards, too.
Yeah, I was. I was like, man, this is first time super fight, first time winning something at brown belt, first time doing, you know, getting a heel hook, getting a leg lock, and super stoked.
Yeah, you fucking drove into that for sure.
Yeah.
And that was interesting too. Something that I believe makes the break a lot stronger was when you locked your legs and you had an ability to break.
Yeah, I was about to say something about that because at first, you know, legs were separated. You know, I didn't have a reinforced wedge. And then the moment I applied that, you know, reinforced wedge and the, you know, the breakage, you know, like amplified. So
yeah, and you were able to give yourself that bridge, which I think was really important. Being able to actually get the threat at least of the break, you know.
Yep.
Good fucking shit, man. Awesome job. That looks cool. All right, let's go on to this one right here. So what's the story?
So this one, so a little backstory. So this opponent, my opponent, Carlos Enriquez, we were originally supposed to fight in the gi, right? So at this moment, at this time, I was like, all right, I want to try out to compete in gi, the super fighting gi. And then something has happened where he wasn't able to, like, both of us couldn't make the matchup for some reason. And then went back to the gi, or no gi, sorry. And my opponent, his name is Alonzo from a school nearby. You know, he was like, oh yeah, let's do this matchup and so forth. And then I trained hard for it, right? Just working on wrestling defense, more leg locks, like, you know, and at the last minute, he couldn't make weight, right? So he was like 20 pounds over. And so he was trying to convince me to go up to his weight and provide him an advantage. So he can, you know, have that unfair advantage, so to speak, right? Because that's his normal weight, right? Instead of dropping down to my weight. And then, you know, I called it off. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to do this, right? Call off the fight. And then they were trying to give me another person, but then he couldn't do it. So it was like on and off, like, is the fight going to happen? Is the fight not going to happen? And then Carlos's opponent couldn't make it. And so both of us had no opponents to go against. So they're like, okay, matchup, no gi. And I was like, all right, bet. So it was just like a roller coaster of emotions of like, all right, is this fight on? Is a fight off? Is a fight on? Is a fight off? You're like, dang. Yeah, I was like, man, like, let's get it, you know? And then on top of that, like, my, I had an injury on my left hand, my finger. And, you know, I had an injury on that. So it kind of threw me off a little bit for a couple of weeks. But then there was like a whole, like, roller coasters of obstacles and obstacles and obstacles. And then, you know, using that to actually like adapt and make my game a little bit better. You know, not only that, but my intestinal and mental fortitude, you know, got way better because I had to deal with all those things and like, and it was to accomplish what I needed to accomplish.
No, so, nice, man. Yeah, you look way more legit, especially just in that last match alone. And I watched this match already and you look legit. You know, I'm excited to see you compete more. I think an important thing that I've talked about with the last few guests, and I'm sure you could probably attest to it, was like one thing I've been like talking a lot about, especially with like the lower belts that I've been training with and such, is that like at this white belt and blue belt level, like if you lose, it literally doesn't matter. If you win, it doesn't really matter at all either. Like if you win like a white belt tournament, like no one cares. You're not going to get signed by Flow Grappling because you won a blue belt tournament. Like, you know, I think it's more important to like use that time to like develop long-term like solutions to jiu-jitsu. And then when you are at like a brown belt, black belt level, and you do start having like higher level matches, you're actually getting the wins that you want. Right, like you're actually winning the super fights, you're winning the promoted events when everyone's watching. Like, I think that's way more important than like winning a grappling industry white belt tournament, you know?
Wow. Absolutely, and even like progressing through the ranks, right? It's like there's something I read, you know, a while back about your emotions. It's like a ferret animal, right? Like you yourself is, you know. You need to domesticate that. You need to control that, right? And a lot of people are like, hey, leave, you know, in jiu-jitsu, leave your ego at the door, right? You don't want to leave completely all your ego at the door to where you're like, oh, you're going to beat me up.
You need a little aggression going.
Yes, exactly. You need a little incentive of like, hey, I need to push myself, right? So, like, I would say put 90% of your ego at the door and give yourself 10% to actually, like, invest and to kind of work with, right? So that way, like, as a brown belt, I still, I'm going to say this right now, at the mats, I've multiple times, I've gone to sleep, been put to sleep by white belts, been put to sleep by, you know, blue belts, purple belts, and so forth. And the reason being is, hey, I'm trying the mats at the school, right? It's my laboratory. It's an area to where, hey, I'm going to try to figure out if this works, this doesn't work. It's better to, you know, feel the pain now, right? Be passed out here now than apply to some major tournament or a super fight, for example.
Yeah, I'm sure you learned a lot about the limitations of the strangle by just letting yourself kind of.
Exactly. And also, again, it builds that mental, intestinal and mental fortitude, right? But going back to like leaving your ego at the door and trying to grab that little 10%, right, to invest in and to kind of work with other mats. You know, there are days where I'm like, man, this freaking white belt put me to sleep. Oh, this white belt put me in an arm bar, right? it's kind of like constant check on your ego, on your personality, on your
discipline. To see how you're going to react to what happens.
Exactly. Right. And you think about it, right. If you remove all the belts, right. If you just apply just skill again, like I said previously, that what matters. Right. And like at the end of the day, I mean, unless you're some weirdo, right. You want to wear your belt, you know, walking down the street, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, right? It's a skill that's going to help you. The skills is applicable on the streets, right? Out in society versus some belt, right? The belt is a representation and a perception of like, hey, are you good? Are you mastery of something, right? Are you mastery of that art, right? So that with that mindset, it kind of helps you, like, enables you to actually be a little bit more, kind of loose, kind of not too strict on yourself in terms of like, oh, I'm not gonna get this white belt to beat me. I'm not gonna prevent this purple belt to beat me, right? And that way you're gonna excel a lot better because they are actually providing you an opportunity to identify your gaps. They're gonna help you identify those friction points, those weaknesses in your game. And by that, it's kind of like, hey, lower belts are helpful, you know? They're not only like food for the higher belts, you know, to eat, but also to, you know, to actually, they are actually your friends to help you out.
You can learn something from them for sure. But here, let's get into this match here, though. So what's going through your mind here at the beginning? Well, he just
sit down and right at you. I was surprised by that. He's like, man, he just okay. So when I was a purple
belt, looks like you have an Ashi right away.
Exactly. So this at this moment, I had a quick flashback to when I was a purple belt. So when I was a purple belt, I did the exact same thing. I sat down, and the guy that I went against, he went right into a flying triangle on me. So at this moment, I was like, okay, I gotta make sure I gotta keep my elbows close and make sure that a flying triangle does not happen to me in this scenario, right? In this super fight. So at this moment, he kind of hopped in and I was like, all right, now I can transfer into cross Ashi.
He transferred that right into it really quick.
Right. And then I try to attack it. And then again, looking at hindsight, I wish I could kind of break him down more, grabbing on the secondary leg here. You know, bringing down more Chizushi, more off balance, but yeah. And then from here, I was, you know, trying to attack that leg. Yep, switching to 50-50 or also Ashi.
That was good transfers.
Yep. And at this point, my professor was like, hey, grab secondary leg.
Yeah.
Hit my face. And I was like, okay, whatever. Relax. Again, no Kuchi. And then this time, let me try for a headlock, but I knew that wasn't the thing that I'm trying to do. So, yeah, he's trying to do a toe hold, bring my right foot out. Again, his right heel was exposed. So I wanted to attack it. As he went for my leg.
He went for like an over-under style of pass. He almost got you there. And then right. You keep your foot to the inside. That was great.
Yep. And I knew like, yep, I'm not going to.
You did that same move that you did last time.
Yep. Yep. And then, again, the spin out problem here, just kept rolling with it, right? So I lost his knee. And then right here, I'm like trying to get a breather, trying to assess what's going on. So he had a really tight grip right here, right? So he's actually, his right leg has a De La Riva hook on me. And so I'm like, okay, he's gonna pummel his left leg in. I'm gonna pummel my leg in, right? Have inside control.
At this point, after trying to crank on those heel hooks a bit, what was like going through your mind? Did you feel anything? Was there something that like popped up? I know like some people, they can sometimes get like a little tunnel vision and then they get like tired. Like what was your attitude?
For me was, I felt a little slight sort of tunnel vision with those heel hooks, right? And also like the placement of where the heel is, okay? So my last match, last push that we saw, right? His heel placement was on towards the end of my forearm, right near the elbow pit. Where I should have had it was, especially with the palm-to-palm grip that I had, it should have been more properly placed on the wrist bone, right? Closer to the hand. So I was like, this time I was like, hey, I'm gonna try to make sure that when I apply it this time, it's closer to the wrist and on the wrist and actually have a proper placement. So I was more focused on that. And then here, you know, with leg locks, right? One of the principal fundamentals is have inside leg control. And that's exactly what happened, right? Pull my leg in. The moment his upper body fell back, right? I had both inside leg control or inside channel control. I pulled in straight in Rumiya or Ashi Rami. And then I modified outside Ashi right there. And then just focus on, you know, good proper placement, good fundamentals of breakage, and then go from there.
Yeah, that grip looks way tighter, right? When you had that on the, you I see it like a little bit higher up. It probably was a lot tighter there. And you do a really good job at using the bridge to get the break. You lifted your hips up, right? That's something that you consciously do. You lift your hips up in order to bridge.
Yeah, so again, like, you know, John Donahue, what he's saying is like, everybody so focused on the heel, like turning the heel in order to get the breakage, but the breakage happens on the bridge, right? On locking and engaging those hips, and the lifting the heel is basically icing on the cake, right? So that's why I was, as you can see, like that's what I was focused on, is actually engaging my legs, you know, isolating his upper leg, and then applying like the icing on the cake of like lifting the heel.
So. I know Lachlan talks a lot about, I don't know if you've heard this before, he talks about like pulling the slack out and then yes. using your legs to create the break that is needed. Yeah. He looks very upset.
Yeah, he was just surprised, because another thing was, I didn't know this is for a title match, right? So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go for a match. And then
oh, look at this. Did you weren't expecting that?
Yeah. Well, it was like, hey, you're here for a title match, by the way. And I was like, oh, okay. That's but cool. Again, I didn't think of it as that. I just think every regardless of what level it is, every match is just another day, you know, like just rolling, right?
It's like an open mat round.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, just rolling is experience, right? So that's, yeah.
That was fucking awesome, man. Thanks a lot for breaking that down. That was some good stuff. That was some good footage. Now, gotta probably wrap it up a little bit here, but I definitely want to know before you go, you know, if you had any notes as far as like what the journey as being a brown belt is, and then even like what are some of your goals that you're trying to accomplish, if any.
So for me, like as a brown belt, I feel like at this point it's more of like, you know, if you think about it, as you know, an analogy I like to use is, each belt or each my progression is like building a sword, right? Like building the hilt, the guard, and the blade itself, right? At first, I mean, obviously, when you put it together, it's gonna be blunt, right? So as a brown belt, this is where you actually polish the blade, right? This is where you polish your techniques, polish the concept that you know that you require over the years, right? And still expanding and have an open mind of like grabbing new concepts, so that way you're able to open up, you know, new doors, new things to know, to learn. And also kind of tie into everything that you learn, right? So that's the one thing I've learned as a brown belt. And then for my future goals, well, as of late, I started, instead of like, you know, my New Year's resolution for this year was no more guard pulling, or at least 10% guard pulling, and like more time investing in takedowns, like stand up. So I've been like investing in like doing more stand up, actually spending time with at a different school for judo.
Nice.
And I actually have a judo tournament tomorrow, so.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Dude, that's good for you, man. That's exciting.
So it's nice to actually kind of go out of my comfort zone and like actually learn something different. So that way, all this stuff, all the knowledge I have obtained doing something different, like judo, bringing that back, filling those gaps for my other school. And that way it's like a nice blend, you know? And then vice versa, you know, when I'm at judo, it's like, hey, we're doing groundwork. I'm like, in my head, no, great. I want to be here for the throws, but we do groundwork, like, great, you know. And then providing that knowledge that I have as a brown belt in jiu-jitsu to the judo players, you know, and then it's a nice, like, exchange of knowledge. So
yeah, that is interesting. Now it's going to be all takedowns. And you can do any takedown that you really like. Want to without fearing the consequence of like getting swept at the same time, right?
Right, right. Like
the rule set is so different.
Yeah, it's you know, different things. And that's another thing too, is like not only if you just want to focus on jiu-jitsu, that's fine. But I feel like if you cross train or go to different schools and stuff and learn new knowledge, like man, it will elevate your, you know, your grappling experience, you know, a lot more, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in cross training in general. Obviously, like to the extent of which is like you're not going like down the block to your professor's competitive gym, but like if you go to a gym that's like 3 hours away or something, or there's like a specific person that you're trying to learn from, or you have a friend that rolls at a different gym, like I think it can absolutely be a very beneficial thing for people to do that. And I think that people who are like, no cross training if you're my student, whatever. I think it's a very like kind of old school, little insecure type of thing.
Like the old school, like, you know, name of Kurionchi, right? Like, you know, when I was a white belt, it's like, obviously, again, right? Talk about the things we talked about earlier about, you know, when you go to that school, that mindset of like, you know, you're going to adopt the mindset of that school, the teachings and the professor, right? Kind of had that. But then as the years goes by, I'm like, yeah, I don't believe that anymore, right? Like, it's important to cross train. Now, there are schools where like, yeah, don't go to our like rival, like an actual rival school, you know? But if you go to some school that is like very acceptable, very opening, have a friendly rivalry with your school, that's perfectly fine, right? Because the whole point is like sharing. Like, jiu-jitsu is not only a sport, right? It's an art, right? It's the gentle art, right? And then within the art itself is the sharing and common understanding of, like, you know, of knowledge and what that share of knowledge is, you know, a brotherhood, sisterhood, whatever you want to call it, to where it kind of combine, you know, tie us all together in a very, like, humanistic way, and it kind of enables a betterment of the sport society, mm-hmm. right? So that's what I believe, like, that's why it's important to, what are good like products of cross-training and sharing knowledge with other people, other schools, you know?
Yeah, I think there's definitely like almost like a networking thing to it. Like you can make a lot of friends. And also too, I think it gives you a good opportunity to challenge your technique that you learn at your school. Cause obviously it's gonna be different when you're trying to do technique that the professor just taught and everybody just saw that move versus you rolling with somebody who doesn't train at your school and doesn't know the techniques and you get to like run up your technique against them. I think that there's like an unimaginable amount of value in just that alone. But anyway, man, as we ended off here, is there anything that you want to plug? You have like a Instagram or is there like any sponsorships or anything that you want to talk about?
You guys want to follow me on my Instagram is AshiGarami92. Just want to shout out to, you know, my Professor Travis Moore, Professor Chris Roscoe, and everybody else at Legends BJJ for helping me continue on my journey as a jiu-jitsu practitioner. Shout out to MSHQ Judo for inviting me in and actually teaching me a little bit of your stand-up and judo. And thanks for everybody, you know, from years past to get me to where I am today.
Fucking awesome, man. Hey, Davis, thank you so much for coming on, man, and sharing everything. This was a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right.